Let's go to Darwin, Origin of Species now, see? I think this is very interesting. This is not a bad book. Jeffrey Goodman, PhD, The Genesis Mystery. In one sentence, it takes the thesis that the creation of man was done by some extraterrestrial intervention. That the choice is not either or, as some people would make it. God creating everything all at once 7,000 years ago, Bishop Usher's theory. Neither is the evolutionary theory applicable to man, and suggests an alternate view somewhere in the middle, that the Adam that God created, or the Adam that occurred, was the result of an intervener. Rather interesting, and I think well done for his thesis. One of the more interesting things about it is a good solid scientist is devoting a chapter to the way of the shaman. And I'll get on the shaman when I'm teaching on demonology, a concept and a practice that ivory towered people so beaten down with empiricism in the Western world just think doesn't happen because they've never seen it. Well, even a Missourian would be convinced if you saw some of them work. The question is like parapsychology. It's not whether or not it happens. The question is how. R.L.C. Brackman's book, A Delicate Arrangement, completely reconstructs the events that actually took place involving Darwin, Wallace, and the discovery of the theory of evolution through natural selection. The name of this book is The Genesis Mystery by Jeffrey Goodman, Ph.D. Brackman, a bureau chief with the United Press International, went to England and sought out the descendants of Darwin, Wallace, and their scientific associates, gaining access to their now historic correspondence, diaries, and scientific notes. Brackman uncovered the truth behind the legends that have been built up about Darwin and the theory of evolution. Brackman's conclusion was, Wallace, not Darwin, first wrote out the complete theory of the origin and divergence of species by natural selection, the theory which is today universally ascribed to Darwin. Now, who is this guy Wallace? You know that? Hey, he lays down his proof pretty thoroughly. If you want the real thorough proof, buy Brackman's book, A Delicate Arrangement, which lays the whole case out. But this is one of the most succinct summaries of it. Who is this fellow Wallace? I mean, this is enough to make you real mad. Alfred Russel Wallace has lost his place in history as the true discoverer of the theory of evolution to Charles Darwin. Well, I know preachers are not supposed to even talk about such a dirty word as evolution. Well, I'm unorthodox. What is worse, I hate ignoramuses in any field. I hate people who reject religion ignorantly. I equally hate bacon-headed Christians too lazy to study the subject who talk about evolution from a perspective of ignorance. Feel the same way about it? I think we ought to give a medal to Richard Pryor. He said, if men could get pregnant, abortion would have been legalized 7,000 years ago. That'll rattle some teeth. I believe only God can take life. I am very humble on the subject of abortion. You say, are you for it? No, I believe that the last chapter hasn't been written on it, and I don't like what's happening, and I really don't like what the Supreme Court's done on the subject. But I am a little tired of know-it-all men making pronouncements on the subject and purveyors of guilt. I firmly agree with Francis Schaeffer that when society becomes callous about preborn life, callous about it. You see, you don't have to be callous about it to be humble about the subject and leave decisions to people themselves and discuss it intelligently instead of an emotional fit of fury. I firmly agree with Francis Schaeffer that if a society gets callous about pre-birth life, the next step is to get callous about the aged and the infirm. And it's not a decision for society to make. And if you can, without fear and trembling and without humility on the subject, become unconcerned about preborn life, the next step society shows, Nazi Germany is the pattern, is the aged had better get fearful. There are just as many moral problems facing families and doctors in the scientific world where people are kept alive as vegetables on machines and hospitals, and the issue of death. The church needs to approach these subjects with a little more humility. That's all I'm saying. And I think Richard Pryor needs to know. I don't want to get down to my 3 minutes on Darwin. But I want to hear more. I tip my hat when I see a woman preaching on this subject. I feel she's got the credentials. This is an issue I want to listen to women on, not men. That ought to fool some people who think Jean, the old chauvinist, wishes women were born without mouths. You see, I'm not as bad as I'm painted. That's one subject. I stand at attention and say, I want to hear the mothers talk. Men, shut up. You ever heard me say, women, shut your mouth? Well, on this subject, men, shut your mouth. And if there's any area in the world women should show off their brains, go to it, ladies. Go to it. Occasionally, this is the unknow-it-all channel, too. Occasionally. History's lost sight of Wallace's genius and startling prophetic insights into a dozen different fields. Who is this guy, Wallace? Well, he got cheated. All historians of science acknowledge that Wallace was independently working toward the theory of evolution and that a series of articles by Wallace in scientific journals spurred the older Darwin, who had yet to publish a line on evolution, though he'd been mulling over the question for more than 20 years, to publish his own thoughts on the matter. In September of 1855, Wallace's Sarawak Law, on the law which has regulated the introduction of new species, was published in the Annals and Magazine of National History, or Natural History. The Sarawak Law contained all the elements of the theory of evolution except the mechanism behind the divergence of species, natural selection, as it's called, and is generally considered to be the biggest step forward in evolutionary theory up until that time. The Sarawak Law implies a common ancestry for all living things, including man, and to quote the paper, quote, and hey, I'm not for evolution, but I believe the guy who promoted the theory and did the scholarship ought to get the credit, and I think there's something wrong with a world that crams Darwin down everybody's throat when he was a fraud and didn't even do it. Keep going. The Sarawak Law implies a common ancestry for all living things, including man, and to quote the paper, quote, absolutely necessitates the former existence of a whole series of extinct genera filling up the gap between isolated genera, which in many cases now alone exist. These developments, having unfolded the Sarawak Law, Wallace's words said, through a great lapse of time. After reading the Sarawak Law, Darwin's closest associates, Sir Charles Lyell, one of the fathers of geology, and Sir Joseph Dalton Hooker, director of Britain's renowned botanical institution, Kew Gardens, were quick to encourage Darwin to get moving. And from this point on, Brackman unfolds a shattering tale in which Darwin's publication of Origin in 1859 appears as much a high point of human chicanery as of science. Who was this guy, Wallace, that got cheated out of the credit for the theory? Wallace grew up in the English countryside along the Welsh border. He came of middle-class parents who were devoutly religious members of the Church of England. His father tutored school children and ran a small subscription library. Am I boring you? The Wallaces, you know, I think it's really funny for a Christian preacher to announce over TV that Darwin was a fraud. I mean, preacher's been beating on evolution for years. Proved how much they know about it. They didn't even know the guy they've beaten on was a fraud. It's like beating a guy to death for being a sinner when he doesn't know how to sin. Poor old Darwin. Dig up Wallace and beat on him. But no, don't. Poor guy suffered enough. He got robbed of the credit. Listen to this. What a terrible thing. The Wallace's financial situation was always strained. See, what you're going to find out is, in the long run, it's bucks that count. See? Bucks. That's why the world doesn't want the church to have any loot. They know that. If you got money. You see, Darwin, you're going to find out, had the money that got him the friends, that got him the credit. You'd be a fraud. Get by if you got money. The world knows that. They don't want the church to have any money. That way they can keep you down where they can squash you. Wallace's financial situation was always strained, and Alfred, a very tall, shy boy, I know that I've just got your mind divided now. No sense going any further on this, is there? A tall, shy boy had to quit school at 14 before finishing the equivalent of junior high school. He worked first as an apprentice carpenter and then as a surveyor. Like his parents, he had a love for reading, long walks in the country, and on these walks, his interest in nature began to grow. He quickly taught himself botany. At 21, he taught English at the Reverend Abraham Hills Collegiate School in Leicester. He spent his free time building up his herbarium and reading every book available about travel in the tropics. It was at this time that he met Henry Walter Bates, a self-educated entomologist who also had to support his study of nature by working in the trades. Then I like to read about these people because I find people wanting to, quote, go in the ministry. I don't want to see anybody in the ministry that doesn't make this kind of dedication look second. I've seen a generation of people getting a Bible under their arm, playing around in Bible school for 3 years and saying, give me some place to preach. God's men ought to lead the pack. This is the kind of dedication that ought to go into anything you do for God. Close. If you want to do something, you can do it. He supported himself in the trades. Close friendship developed, and Wallace found himself also studying entomology, collecting insects and trading beetles with Bates. Now, there's something interesting. Trade beetles. With a railroad building boom going on in England, Wallace left his teaching job to survey for the railroad for a few years. This allowed him to build up his savings. Oh, I wish I could get people that would approach God's Word and proclaiming it that way. In 1847, at age 24, he decided to yield to his first love. Dissatisfied with a mere local collection, since little is to be learned by it, Wallace wrote Bates and proposed that they set out for the Amazon. 1847, it wasn't air-conditioned. that they set out for the Amazon with a view toward solving the problem of the origin of species. First use of that phrase. Darwin didn't originate it. A dozen years later, these words made up the title of Darwin's book. At this time, there was no way to make a steady living but doing scientific research, which was the private domain of eccentric aristocrats and moneyed gentlemen. Charles Darwin was a member of this privileged fraternity. And his great independent wealth permitted Darwin his famed 5-year idyllic journey on the HMS Beagle to South America and the Galapagos Islands. Lacking such resources, Wallace proposed to Bates a wild scheme to accomplish their ends. The two would make for themselves collections of the natural life and dispose of the duplicates in London to pay expenses. Bates at once agreed, and the two soon found themselves sailing aboard the square-rigged bark Mischief toward the steaming jungles of the Amazon. The handful of small towns along the Amazon were populated by pirates, slavers, pimps, and unscrupulous traders, while the jungles belonged to the warring, head-hunting, Stone Age Indian tribes with blowguns. They're looking for bugs. And Christians want to dedicate their life. I'll go where you want me to go, dear Lord. I can't stand phonies. I mean, now, this is what Christians ought to be, dedicated like that. If they do that for bugs, what do you do for Jesus? One can imagine the impression made by these two civilians in their khakis, each with a shotgun slung over one shoulder and a butterfly net over the other. Englishmen to the core, they never missed their afternoon tea. But they found what they came for. The Amazon was a colossal biological extravaganza, ganza, abounding with plants. The ganzas are ordinary, ganzas are really something. The world's largest butterflies, beetles, and rodents. Doesn't that turn you on? The rodent part. 150 species of hummingbirds. I heard somebody on the radio today say, if you want to get cured of nervousness, go see a rat movie. A horror rat movie. You'll get enough nervousness in your system to last the whole year. What's that got to do with Wallace? Nothing. World's largest butterflies, beetles, and rodents. I just thought I'd let you in on the marvelous things I listen to on radio when I'm not listening to me. 150 species of hummingbirds. Now, that's something. 2,000 different species of fish, including the sharp-toothed piranha. Inevitably, they had their share of all too close encounters with the jungle's less hospitable denizens. The stealthy black jaguar, the powerful 40-foot anaconda, the poisonous feather lance, fiery red ants, and terrifying vampire bats. For bugs. All this for bugs. And they have youth rallies in Los Angeles, people who want to work for Jesus. Bates, entranced, described the scene as a veritable uproar of life. After 2 years, having worked their way 1,000 miles up the Amazon River together, in 1847, Wallace and Bates decided to split up and go it alone. Each to brave the jungle alone so as to cover more territory and increase their already stunning collections of bugs. Bates came home after 5 years in the jungle with a collection of 14,712 different species of insects. Oh, he had more than bugs. Birds, reptiles, and other creatures. Can you imagine that? For bugs, birds, and rodents. Wallace spent 2 more years in the Amazon gathering facts and pondering the pregnant idea of closely allied species, which he later expanded into his perceptive Sarawak law. Throughout all their adventures, both men endured the additional burden of tropical diseases. They suffered from yellow fever and repeated bouts of dysentery and malaria. Do you understand what dedication means? For bugs. Wallace left the Amazon after 4 years. Oh, I've been serving the Lord, and I stubbed my toe. And God's not on his throne, so I'm going to quit. This guy is just after bugs. To get money, to go hunt more bugs. We're talking about eternal life. Oh, I'm dedicated. Just think what I went through. I gave $1,000. Couldn't gamble as much at the country club. You think you had it tough? You didn't realize what this guy just went through for bugs? Wallace left the Amazon after 4 years. After a week at sea, the sailing vessel he had booked passage on caught fire and went down. With it went most of his collections and sketches, his daily journal, and the financial profit he had expected. And you thought you were the only one who had trouble. Now he's only looking for bugs. Then there were 10 days at sea in a lifeboat, only to be rescued by a sailing vessel with a dangerously inept crew and rancid food. A lesser man might never again have left the cozy shores of England. But Wallace, a shy and modest man, knew he couldn't solve the origin of species problem in drawing rooms, and he was soon making plans for his next trip. The Royal Geographic Society, impressed with Wallace's work and fervor, I would be too, arranged his passage to Singapore. Aboard the HMS, now the last one he went on was the Mischief. Now he's going on the HMS Frolic. He's come up in the world. Life's funny. How do you get bored? You gotta be awful stupid to get bored, you know that? Using Singapore as a home base, Wallace visited in succession Borneo, Java, Sumatra, Bali. I've been there. It's Bali. Timor. The Celebes. The Moluccas. New Guinea. He was the first European to set foot in many of these areas, looking for bugs. Most important, Wallace still sought a solution to the species problem. To my mind, he wrote, the evolution of species has taken place by, and he goes on and explains it. He was especially excited to see the orangutans of Borneo. Incipient bureaucrats, not yet hired. He believed that the orangutan, like the chimpanzee and the gorilla, had evolved over the ages just as man had. It was in northwestern Borneo, while the house guest of a swashbuckling white rajah, that he wrote his Sarawak Law, his paper on the succession of species. The paper was published in England in September 1855, and a year later, he corresponded with Darwin about it. Like the Amazon, the Malay Islands were relatively uninhabited, with torrid temperatures, impenetrable terrain, and rampant disease. Again, Wallace suffered constant discomfort, harrowing escapades with snakes and beasts and renewed bouts of dysentery and malaria. Charles Allen, the English assistant Wallace had brought out with him, soon quit. And Wallace, now 32, with all that mileage under his belt, hired a young Malay named Ali as his assistant for the rest of his stay. Wallace taught Ali the chores of camp and collecting. Ali taught Wallace the Malay language and how to travel among the islands by outrigger canoe. Wallace stayed in the archipelago a total of 8 years with 96 separate collecting expeditions into the remotest regions traveled 14,000 miles and collected 125,000 specimens. Give me an intern like that. Give me lots of interns like that. On March 1st, 1858, 3 years into his stay in the archipelago, Wallace found himself stalled at Ternate in the Moluccas, or Moluccas, or Spice Islands. His plan to wander about collecting thwarted by sudden illness. Despite large doses of quinine, he was immobilized by the alternating chills and fevers of another malarial attack. Confined to his crude camp bed, he had nothing to do but think over subjects of particular interest. Here, his mind racing in a fit of near delirium, Wallace conceived the almost inconceivable. It's bad enough to steal from a guy that went through that in the Amazon, had his ship go down, then went through what he went in the Malaysian territories, and then gets his burst of genius in a sick bed. It's a far away from London. I mean, that's awful. And that's what Darwin did. Now, you want to hear what he conceived and what Brackman unfolded, the shattering tale, which is as much a high point of human chicanery as of science. According to Brackman's reconstruction, that's where I'm going to pick it up next time, right there. That's all you get tonight.